strikes 10. Coffee time again, while the world is rushing to its judgment day, judgment day.
Welcome to the To Be Do podcast from the Belonging Exchange with Philip Amerson. To Be Do has a mission to foster a sense of belonging, strengthening relationships through storytelling and shared, exchanged experiences. A belonging exchange, if you will. Indeed, our website is belongingexchange.org. Now it's your turn to be, do, as we enter the Belonging Exchange. Here's Dr. Philip Amerson.
Greetings. This is Philip Amerson again with the To Be and To Do podcast, a part of the Belonging Exchange resource set. We've been talking with Jonathan Massimi, who, well, every time I talk with Jonathan, the conversation could go on for, you know, an afternoon or two or three, or maybe after a cold drink or four. So it's great to have you with us, Jonathan. And we've been exploring questions of what it means to link up faith experience with work to know the stranger or to know the other person. As we came to the end of our last conversation, I was reminded of now more than 30 years ago being in Evansville, Indiana. And we had a situation that I'll describe briefly. There were unfortunately some rapes in the neighborhood, low-income neighborhood. And who came to save the neighborhood but the Ku Klux Klan? And I've thought about this often since, especially given the rise of white nationalism here in the United States, maybe in Canada too, I don't know. But someone said, well, call Will Campbell, because Will was a Southern Baptist minister, but very involved in civil rights, and he had worked a lot with the Klan. So I called Will and said, this is our situation. We've got the Klan organizing. We're trying to figure out how our little community can respond. And Will pretty quickly said to me, what are their names? And I thought, do you mean the women who are raped or the people in our community that are doing this great heroic work? And he said, no, what are the names of the Klan members? And I thought, you want me to know them? Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of another episode we'll talk about in a future broadcast. But it just reminded me powerfully that we tend to make the stranger and the different one precisely the person that might be the host to a whole new way of seeing the world. And so, Jonathan, share a bit more about the stranger and the guest and what you've experienced in your work as you've discovered ways to find a resource in surprising places.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about this last number of days. So I'm a father of three. And one of the first lessons I found myself teaching my children was don't talk to strangers. Right? Right. And that teaching was reinforced when they went to junior kindergarten. And I'm not sure if they have this in the States, but here in Canada, they talk a lot about stranger danger.
Oh, I haven't heard that. Yeah.
And they have a curriculum tied to it. And there's some like key principles within this curriculum. Like the first is, if someone approaches you that you don't know, you know, walk the other way, go to a trusted adult, don't take candy from strangers, you know, all those wonderful tidbits. And something that struck me was from a very, very early age, we're actually instructed to fear
the one
that's different.
Yeah.
And recognizing that within the stranger, there can be an enemy. Or there can be a guest. There can be harm. Or there could be health. Hmm. And within the Christian tradition, it is the stranger who may be God, that reveals God's self to us, reveals a new way of being and understanding. So the other interesting principle that I was kind of riffing off of in my own mind was, if you find yourself encountering a stranger, my children were taught to find a helpful adult, or a safe adult. And they would list those safe adults as teachers, police officers, caregivers, etc. And what I found interesting, even in the curriculum, the safety was found in institutional figures. And I've been an institutional, I am an institutional figure. And with that is tied the assumption that I'm safe. And when I enter into these spaces, I enter as a helpful individual. But by virtue of being part of the institutions, the church, being part of the municipality as a supervisor back in the day, I'm bringing in a narrative or a history where people may have been harmed by the church, may have been harmed by the institution. So my helpfulness does not, or my desire to help, or my mandate, or my funding stream does not count as an invitation into people's lives. I find those invitations come relationally. And when I go into communities, I hang out in somewhat of those neutral spaces, the coffee shops, the parks, with curiosity, asking questions. And slowly I find that those invitations come. So also another image that came to mind for me, and I make the joke because with my Italian background, I say there's not a lot of Italian hockey players, because all our grandfathers would take our hockey sticks to cut them up and use them for their tomato plants. So I grew up with gardens around me, right? And there was a certain way you entered the garden, right? So even my kids, if they're kicking around a soccer ball, my dad's like, whoa, I just planted that. I just did that. So there is this cautiousness of recognizing you're entering into a space. You don't want to disturb what is growing. You enter to tend, to help, to nourish, to come alongside. Right. And just using like ecological language, you also don't want to enter as an invasive species. And I think the invasiveness of it is when you enter into those spaces with a scarcity mindset and slowly begin with, what are the problems here? And me, as the safe adult or the safe institutional figure, will come and help you. And there becomes this power imbalance that's present, dependencies. You know, Ivan Illich and John McKnight would talk about the iatrogenic effect of social services. You know, we enter into these spaces thinking that we're going to do something that brings about health, but there's side effects. And recognizing those side effects are very important. So I've learned to enter into spaces like a garden very gently and don't disturb the tomato plants.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So in my community, and I'm afraid all across North America, we have a growing problem of people living rough, living on the streets. And my wife's in a wonderful group of women who have just read the book When We Walk by Adler and Burns. And part of that book is encouraging people to do the simple thing of greeting, of asking a name, of sharing a brief story, and not pulling out your wallet first, if at all. But it's the way one enters often. Well, so this is Phil the provocateur. I have a great deal of trouble with the church that believes its role is to fix people and to provide the resources that no one has asked for. Now, okay, that's overstated. But, you know, it. I don't know if in Canada you have this, but every fall, we, in many, many congregations, we ask people to bring backpacks and school supplies, and we fix up backpacks for the kids that are going to start school, as if that solves it. And we haven't dealt with the question of who the children are, who the parents are, who the teachers are, what are the funding mechanisms that are causing children not to have the supplies they need at school to begin with. And it's that kind of assumption that we're the fixers, that we have the right solutions, that I find more than problematic. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would go as far as to say they're unchristian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know here there are churches that engage in the same type of activities. Reality is there are people that need backpacks.
Yeah.
People do need school supplies, etc. Actually, I was having this discussion a number of years ago with John, and we were talking about not just the action, but how the action's framed. So you have your backpacks, you have your, I'm going to name a couple of different things churches do, family fun fairs, community barbecues, things like that. And the way we attract people is come and get a free backpack or come to a free meal. And we are putting our relationships with others in economic terms, free yep. without money. And yep. the only charge is your presence. And it becomes unidirectional. We do for you. There's no way of really receiving from the other. And that's what I was talking about before with the Eucharist, is we bring our gifts, yes, but there's this reciprocity with God, and it encourages us to have a reciprocity with others. And it reminds me of a story. There was this gentleman that he would always show up to my office when he needed money or needed boots or things like that. And, you know, like every good minister, we have our off day and we go off of our Jesus script and we get pissed off. Right? I'm going to change his
I name. Never did. Never.
I'm going to change his name for the sake of the podcast. And so he came in and I go, Tim, I only see you when you want coffee money. I go, I may be a priest. You may call me father. I go, but I'm not your sugar daddy.
Good.
I said to him. And I said, I don't just want to give you money and you come here. And I go, I feel like you're taking advantage of me.
Yeah.
Can we develop a relationship here? I go, you know what? Sometimes I don't have money for coffee and I know you have some. Why don't you invite me for coffee?
Great. Great, John.
So that opened up the sharing of the resources. Yes. You know, I didn't say to him, he goes, when you invite me, hey, John, let's go for coffee. I wouldn't say, let's go to Starbucks and I'll get like the most expensive. We went to coffee shop. It was $1, things like that. And I let him initiate the relationship. And yes, when we did go out, there were times I'd pay. There were times he would pay. And to say that we're building something here, there's this mutuality and this the relationship that's happening. Yeah. And what I've learned as well is how do we create this idea of belonging? And so over the years, I would have weekly coffees with a friend of mine named Isaiah, and we came up with this belonging APGAR. Right. So, because even that language of, you know, sense of belonging, creating belonging, well, there's five ways we can tell belonging's happening. So the first is, you know, the person's name. The second is they know your name. Mm-hmm. The next is they have received your gift. Next is you've received their gift. And then there's a social standing. You are recognized when you're there. And you are missed when you're gone.
Oh.
So it's not just a person's hanging out. They have societal place there. Their presence, just being there, changes something. And when they're gone, they're missed.
Wow.
And when I'm doing, like in the past, these family fun fairs and such, I never got to know people's names. They were a number. You know, oh, you won the raffle or you did whatever. They received my gift. I never received theirs. And, you know, if we did it the next year or the year after, I didn't even know who came and who was there and who wasn't. It was just a sea of faces. Wow. I'm like, am I truly building relationship here? Is there reciprocity? Are we bringing people into a different narrative? Are we pointing to the Eucharistic table? Are we extending that table into our community? And those are the questions that were going through my mind.
So helpful, John. So we'll call this episode the Coffee and Backpacks episode. And a few years back, I was in one of those congregations on just a one-year interim basis, and the Backpack Sunday came. And I didn't know what to do, but I did have enough sense to invite the principal of the school to come and speak at church the morning we collected them. And we had a little prayer, and I wasn't ready for the great surprise, the great gift, the great movement to items 2, 3, 4, and 5 in your scheme. When she stood, she said, "Now, who of you are going to be at the school tomorrow to help distribute these backpacks? And who of you are going to get to know these children? And who of you are going to come back in future weeks and develop relationships with their parents?" Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to preach that Sunday. The sermon was already given by the principal.
Yeah, that's great.
So thank you for this time. We're going to have to do this again.
Definitely.
Jonathan Massimi, Anglican priest from Kitchener, Ontario, wonderful man, good friend. If you have some reason to want this kind of consult or resource or just a conversation, we'll provide you with contact information that Jonathan is willing to share, and hope that you'll connect with him because he has much wisdom and much experience. Thank you, Jonathan, so much. And this is Philip Amerson with the To Be and To Do podcast saying goodbye and God bless.
Now that you have experienced the Be, Do podcast from the Belonging Exchange with Philip Amerson, it's your turn to be, do. Be the hands of the strong and do community together. You can start by sharing the Be, Do podcast in your community and follow the Be, Do podcast with Philip Amerson at belongingexchange.org.
So come on, old friend, it's coffee time again.